This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.
This is the Premier League Fan Show. Good afternoon with me, Kieran Critchard, between 1 and 2 o'clock. Coming up over the next hour, we'll be looking back at last night's Europa League action. All British clubs going through, that means there are 9 representatives in both the Champions League and the Europa League. We'll be looking ahead to the Premier League weekend, a full fixture list, as obviously the fixtures intensify and with every game they get more and more important. We'll also be covering the top stories as Jurgen Klopp signs a new contract at Liverpool until 2024. How much longer can Manuel Pellegrini last at West Ham? What transfers could we have between the Bundesliga and the Premier League? And also Pep Guardiola, does he have this break clause in his contract and could he leave Manchester City at the end of the season? Remember, if you want to get in touch, call us on 0208 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp. This is the Premier League Fan Show here on Love Sport. So that number again, 0208 7020 558. If you want to have your voice heard, we want to hear from you this afternoon. Obviously, we've been bringing the news to you the last couple of days, and it's the fact that we are going national from Monday. So from this Monday, you'll be able to get us on your national digital radio, no matter where you are across the UK. So make sure, obviously, you stay tuned to us and follow us on this journey as we go national from Monday. Well, it's been obviously a big 24 hours, not just in the sporting context, but some pretty big news broke this morning from up on Merseyside, and it was the news that Jurgen Klopp had signed a new contract until 2024. His original contract was set to run out in 2022, but he signed a 2-year contract extension, which means he'll be there until at least 2024. To talk about that, a man that's going to be at Jurgen's press conference in just under half an hour's time. So many thanks to Richard Buxton, Merseyside football journalist, for joining us this afternoon. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Richard. I know, obviously, it's a very, very busy afternoon, as you'll be at Jurgen's presser in 25 minutes' time. So he signed that new contract until 2024. There was a belief maybe that when he got to the end of this contract, which would have been, or the old contract, he would have been there for 7 years, like he had been at Mainz and Borussia Dortmund before, and maybe he would go on to become the German national manager. But he signed this new 2-year contract. Yet more fantastic news for Liverpool fans.
Yeah, it's massive news for Liverpool fans. And obviously, as you say, there were doubts about would he stay beyond the 2022 original deadline. But, I mean, you mentioned about Mainz and Borussia Dortmund. You know, there was a stepping up in terms of when he left one club and went to another one. It wasn't really a case of he burnt out. So I think the fact that he's now committed for a further 2 years at Liverpool and will be one of the longest serving managers in the club's history, if he does see that out, that's an indication of what he sees the future for Liverpool and for himself.
I wanted to cast your mind back, Richard, to obviously when Jurgen Klopp was appointed, and I remember that first press conference very, very vividly. He obviously dubbed himself the normal one when everyone was talking about what terminology would he use to describe himself. But one thing that stuck with me as a Liverpool fan ever since he took over, since that first press conference, was how he was going to turn Liverpool fans from doubters into believers. Because at the end of the Brendan Rodgers reign, the atmosphere at Anfield wasn't very good. The fans had turned on the manager. The fans weren't enjoying watching their team play. Obviously, Liverpool won the Champions League this year. They're winning trophies, top of the Premier League at the moment. But was one of the big differences that Jurgen Klopp made initially was how he suddenly made Liverpool fans fall back in love with the club again.
I think so, yeah. I think probably one of the biggest things was when he lost to Crystal Palace at the back end of that 2015-16 season, and Klopp noticed a lot of fans were streaming for the exits, and he couldn't understand why at 2-1 down that they were leaving, and he started to kind of reconnect with the fan base through obviously urging them to get behind the team, and you know, the football they're playing has definitely helped get fans on the edge of a seat rather than heading for the exit. So I think that was probably the biggest thing, was that disconnect that existed under Rodgers and you know, under previous Liverpool managers.
You look at his record, it took him just 159 games to get to 100 wins for Liverpool, which is the best of any Liverpool manager, 8 fewer than the next best, which was Kenny Dalglish. it just shows that obviously in that first season when he came in a couple of months in, it was about him getting used to the squad, who he wanted, who he didn't want, and got to actually two cup finals in that season despite not being in charge at the start of the season. But ever since, it's just been a gradual development, a consistency that you've seen over the last couple of seasons. I mean, it's been a ridiculous record. Liverpool over 30 games unbeaten. They haven't lost at home in well over a couple of years, in close to 50 games. That this side under Jurgen Klopp has just developed so much consistency.
Yeah, and I think that's been a big factor with in terms of the development of Liverpool as a club under Klopp's leadership. I think they've become hard to beat. As you said, the home record at Anfield is incredible. I mean, it's now over 2.5 years since you last lost the league game at Anfield. So, you know, that resilience has been part and parcel of the evolution of Liverpool. And I think the signings he's brought in season on season have pretty much upgraded the team, you know, step by step. And that's been a massive, massive components of that, because Liverpool didn't always have players who were, well, let's say, capable of doing the shirt justice, and I don't think you could doubt any commitments of the players who are out there at the moment.
Where do you think Richard Jurgen Klopp ranks amongst Liverpool managers? Obviously, with this extension, it would make him one of the longest serving managers in the club's history. And obviously, we've had so many great managers over the years, whether it be Shankly, whether it be Paisley, whether it be Fagan. Where does he rank? Or is the answer to that question really ultimately at the end of that contract, we will know where he ranks?
I think ultimately it's going to be when his contract does expire and you know, you look back on the body of work that he's completed at Liverpool. I think that's when you judge him, and I think that's when every Liverpool manager's judged. But in terms of the modern standards, I think he's probably already on his way to eclipsing, you know, the likes of Rafa Benitez and Gerard Houllier in that sort of, you know, revered trophy-winning manager. And if he wins the title this season or in the very near future, and it does look like it will be this season, then you've got to say he's probably going to be up there with the likes of Kenny Dalglish and maybe just below Bob Paisley and Bill Shankly.
When people talk about managers fitting a club, and it may sound like a bit of a cliche in this modern day, you talk about when you're appointing a manager, it's got to be someone that suits the philosophy of that club. It's got to be someone that suits the city. Obviously, you go back to when he was appointed, and we've seen it develop over the last 4 years. What Jurgen Klopp has done amazingly well is not just in terms of the on-field stuff from where Liverpool were in 2015 to now in 2019, but actually how much he gets the city, the charisma, the passion, the energy that he exudes is exactly what Liverpool fans are after in a manager.
Yeah, and that's obviously been a big part in terms of, you know, endearing himself to the fan base. Obviously, he's immersed himself in the culture, and wherever Klopp's gone, he's done that. You look at Borussia Dortmund, who you'd say had a similar club in terms of stature, history, you know, that sort of working-class core of a fan base. That was a similar sort of culture that he brought into there, and he's obviously transferred some of the skills he picked up at Dortmund to Liverpool. But, I mean, Liverpool fans love a manager who can feed into what the city's about, what the fan base is about, and that's why Rafa Benitez is still quite highly regarded. But I think if Klopp does deliver the success that a lot of us are anticipating, then I think he will edge ahead of him, which says a lot, because Benitez is still really, really highly regarded to this day, and this is, you know, nearly a decade since he left.
You mentioned a few minutes ago, Richard, about the transfers and the players that Jurgen Klopp has signed. It felt to me under Brendan Rodgers that FSG, Fenway Sports Group, the group that owned Liverpool, didn't quite fully trust Brendan Rodgers. They didn't give him the backing. They didn't give him the funds to go and spend the cash, because you don't feel like they trusted him. With Jurgen Klopp, he has the first and last say on it. He's been helped out massively by the likes of Michael Edwards, Dave Hunter, Ian Fellows. That there have been a number of people there that have really helped him, and it feels like FSG completely trust with every fibre there being Jurgen Klopp with the signings.
Yeah, I think that's probably a fair assessment. I think when you look at, you know, the signings Rodgers made, some were very questionable. There was obviously this standoff between the transfer committee and the management, and there was that degree of mistrust, I think, when Rodgers was in charge. But I think, you know, Liverpool have learned a lot along the way, especially Fenway Sports Group, when it comes to the, you know, the running of a football club. And I think they've learned that they have to trust the manager, and they have to, you know, trust his judgment over the road, because on the face of it, for an investor like FSG, they're looking at stuff in cold hard terms of revenues and tangible success, whereas Klopp's looking at the inner workings with Michael Edwards, the sporting director, and they're getting it right at the moment.
And just finally, just moving slightly away from Jurgen Klopp, when Liverpool put out on Twitter that they were to make an announcement in the next few minutes, some Liverpool fans were thinking it was going to be the official confirmation of a signing, and that is the form of Takumi Minamino from Salzburg. It all emerged yesterday in a public domain that suddenly things developed very quickly, although we understand that it's obviously been something that's been going on for a little while. Just tell us a little bit about Minamino, and I'm pretty sure that subject to a medical, as long as he doesn't fail the medical, he will become a Liverpool player on January 1st, which could mean he could make his debut in the Merseyside derby in the FA Cup.
It's possible, yeah. I think what the club are stressing at the moment privately is that this isn't a done deal by any means yet. There's still a long way to go, and despite Solskjaer's own director coming out and saying that they were in discussion with Liverpool, it's not over the line just yet. So, I mean, there's still a bit of a way to go on that, but I think it's possible that he could make his debut in the derby if he does sign. And, you know, he's an incredible talent, as a lot of those Solskjaer players are. You look at Erling Braut Haaland, Heung-Min Chan, you know, players like that. They look a real, real talent. But Minamino's obviously caught Jurgen Klopp's eye for his work rate, which is something that he's a massive commodity for Liverpool. And also, he scored a goal in the 4-3 win for Liverpool in October for Solskjaer. So there's no doubt that he's got quality. And maybe in a similar position to Jadon Sakiri, he'll be someone who comes in and out of the team. He won't displace the front three, but maybe slot into that midfield role where you need a bit of an attacking player to try and drive it on, because the bridge between defence and attack is quite large when you look at Liverpool's midfield, which is fairly passive, I'd say.
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Richard. That was Richard Buxton, a Merseyside football journalist. He's going to be at Jurgen Klopp's press conference, which gets underway in about a quarter of an hour's time. So many thanks to Richard for joining us. Obviously, Jurgen Klopp has signed that new contract extension of a couple of years until 2024. And it does stick in my mind, that very first press conference, because you remember Brendan Rodgers got sacked after drawing 1-1 in the Merseyside derby in October 2015. It emerged he'd actually been sacked before the game, but was told that would be his final game. It was the infamous Jamie Carragher, Thierry Henry, where Henry puts his hand on Carragher's thigh at the surprise when Ed Chamberlain announces the news. And it was Ancelotti against Klopp for the Liverpool job, and FSG went with Jurgen Klopp. And that first press conference very much sticks in my mind, the not just the normal one comment, but that comment, that quote from doubters to believers, that at the end of Brendan Rodgers' reign, it had become quite toxic, and the fans weren't enjoying watching the club, and it got into a pretty bad state. And Jurgen Klopp came in and said that, and I think it resonated with all of the Liverpool fans. And as I said, that charisma, that energy, that passion that he gives, he completely gets the city, he gets the people, the fans that support the club, which cannot be underestimated as a balance that you need to get right as a manager. And it has certainly been, there have been highs and there have been lows as well, losing the Europa League final, losing the League Cup final, losing the Champions League final in Kiev. So there have been some low moments in there where you couldn't feel any worse in those moments. But he's also brought us some phenomenal moments earlier this year in June in Madrid, winning the Champions League final after beating Barcelona in that incredible comeback in the semi-finals. Currently top of the Premier League table, he's certainly done a phenomenal job. I think it probably will be, once he gets to the end of his contract, once he finishes up at Liverpool, that he will be then ranked amongst a Liverpool greats. But you look at his record, as I said, he got to 100 games quicker than any other Liverpool manager. And considering the list, as I said, of former Liverpool managers, Shankly, Paisley, Fagan, that is an unbelievable record. Liverpool's record they're on at the moment, a club record in terms of unbeaten games, 30-odd since January. It is a phenomenal record. Haven't lost at Anfield in 2.5 years. He is doing a phenomenal job, and it is just reward and a great reward for all of the brilliant work he's done at Liverpool so far. Hopefully, there's much more to come. Interestingly, his new contract until 2024 is announced just a couple of hours after Steven Gerrard's contract is extended until 2024 at Rangers. Read into that what you will. Will it be Jurgen finishing up at Liverpool in 2024 and Stevie G, club legend, coming back to Liverpool?
Love Sport.
Welcome back to the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. Obviously, the final Premier League Fan Show of the week, so let's make it a good one. We're going to be talking all things Manchester City now, and I'm delighted to say we are joined by Adam Waring from City Extra. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Adam. When you open some of the papers this morning, you open it to to see a title or a headline in the Times today, for example. Guardiola's City deal has break clause. He has the option of leaving Manchester City at the end of this season. Do you think that his previous record or his previous experiences at Barcelona, Bayern Munich, that he's exerted so much energy and so much work into it that he perhaps needs a break, that it may not come as a surprise after all the exertions over the last couple of seasons with City getting 198 points over the last couple of years, that it doesn't come as a surprise that maybe he's looking for a break?
Yeah, it's not that surprising. Obviously, when you look at the history and you look at the time he spent at Barcelona and Bayern Munich and the intensity he works at, it does suggest that he does get a bit burnt out and he needs that break. There's some managers who aren't as intense, who can perhaps switch off more, that can last a bit longer. That's why Alex Ferguson was so amazing, that he lasted so long. But Pep is just a different level of intensity. And I think that, I think he probably is feeling that he needs a break. I would prefer him to go and refresh the squad and provide a new challenge for himself, rather than sort of be saying the same things to the same players and it not quite getting through. So I think he'll be worried about the fact that his message isn't quite hitting home as it did over the last couple of years. And he feels like, after he said before that he feels after like 3 years, his message doesn't seem to be getting through anymore. You talk about Poch and the same thing there, in repeating the same things. There's a factor in that as well, in terms of the players that we've got at the minute. We need to really revamp the squad if we're going to keep him. But I do certainly see the idea that he could grow tired of it and knock it on the head at the end of this season.
It's as if you can read the questions I got in front of me, Adam. In terms of potentially an overhaul in Manchester City's squad, do you think that they're at that point going into next season? Obviously, it's still quite a while away, but obviously January's maybe more challenging to do that. But in the summer, are you looking at it and seriously thinking there are probably going to be players they're going to leave? Obviously, David Silva, a legend at Manchester City, one of the best foreign imports we've seen in the Premier League, he's going to be leaving at the end of the season. There are going to be quite a few that will follow him out of the door and potentially quite a number coming in.
Yeah, I agree. It's going to be a really turbulent time if it is this summer when he goes, because when you were listening to the interviews of the players that have signed since Guardiola's come, they've all been saying the reason they signed for Manchester City was because they want to play with Pep Guardiola. Now, of course, we've not managed to announce ourselves on the European stage consistently, and we probably won't do that for another 15 years. You know, Manchester United now can attract players because they had these players supporting them as a kid, whereas that's not the same thing with Man City. So the attraction has been Pep Guardiola. And when he's not there, that attraction sort of fades away, unless he's managed to establish himself as an established City at the top of the European stage. And he hasn't really done that. So without us winning the Champions League, it makes it really difficult for us to be able to retain those players and perhaps even bring them in when people sort of see the Guardiola era as the peak of a football club. And we haven't quite hit the peak that we've needed to.
I wanted to get your views, Adam, on Phil Foden, who started in the week against Shakhtar Donetsk and had a very, very good game. There's so much hope and expectation for him. It maybe is a bit unfair on him to be putting that all on him, because if you remember, Jack Wilshere was quite similar, that the pressure that people put on him to be the next Gazza and look where Jack Wilshere is, not even fit enough to play for West Ham at the moment. Do you think, my view is, I mentioned David Silva's leaving at the end of the season. Now, you would think, or a lot of England fans would think, oh, there's this opportunity to kind of fill the void left by David Silva. Do you think City would, I wouldn't necessarily deem it a risk to put Foden in there, but do you think City are realistically going to turn around and say, Phil Foden, we're going to put your full trust in you and you're going to get the gig? Or do you think what's more likely is they're going to look to bring in someone else as David Silva leaves the club?
I think they are going to bring in someone else. Personally, I don't agree with that. I do think we should be putting more trust in Foden. I don't think it's a fact of heaping all the pressure on him, because, as we've seen, Bernardo Silva's been playing out wide because he's not been favoured over David or Kevin De Bruyne. But in my opinion, he's miles better in the middle and deserves the chance to be our new David Silva. And that's what all City fans see him as. So perhaps Bernardo Silva moving in next year would mean that him and Foden could share the burden of responsibility that David Silva has left. That would be my preferred choice. I think it would be very harsh just throw Foden in all the time. He does still need to be bedded in more next season. Obviously, he clearly needs to play more games, but he shouldn't be playing every minute and be expected to perform at the level David Silva has over the last 5 or 6 years, or even 10 years, which has been unbelievable. Foden's been really, really impressive over the last couple of months. I've not been a person that's really shouted for him to get all these opportunities because he's been pretty inconsistent in the cup games last season. When he's played, he's played well sometimes, but then other times not so well. So he hasn't had the consistency to deserve that many minutes on the pitch, in my opinion. But this season in the Champions League, he's been absolutely brilliant. In the cups, he's done the same. So and he gives us the energy that David Silva doesn't give us anymore in terms of running around in the middle. And he's given us that urgency in the past few weeks when he's come on. The players just seem to be lacking at the moment, the energy. So, yeah, I'm really positive. I hope that City can put more trust in him, but I'm not sure they will.
I mentioned the January transfer window, which inevitably we've got to mid-December. Everyone's talking about what business might or might not be done. In terms of City's transfer business, Pep Guardiola ruled out making any signings. Now, merely, I think, 24 hours after that, City were linked with Nathan Ake, although he's been ruled out for the next 6 weeks with injury. Do you think realistically City will be looking at it, or will it be a simple case of if an opportunity arises, then they'll go for it? If not, City will just sit back and go with the squad that they've currently got?
Yeah, I think it's a factor. If the opportunity arises, then it does. It's got to be at the right price. You know, people talk about City throwing money at people, but in terms of individual players, we don't really like spending a lot of money on wages, and we don't like paying out big transfer fees. We are going to have to do that for a centre-back in the summer, but it's going to be at a real premium if we go for it in January. So I don't see the club doing it. I think when Pep says that we're not going to make any signings, that's not because he's happy. It's because the club's probably telling him that there's nothing there for us to use to sign the players, and we don't think it's good enough value for the long-term future of the club. So it's disappointing the fact that I think that we're not going to sign anyone, but I do think that's the case.
Next up for Manchester City this weekend, the fixtures just come thick and fast at the moment. City travel to London to take on Arsenal on Sunday. City could head into the game 17 points behind Liverpool. Is it a case now of it's an absolute must-win game, this, which won't be easy at Arsenal, but I mean, I think one thing that we probably can guarantee from the game is goals, and neither side probably keeping a clean sheet.
Yeah, no, I agree. In terms of being a must-win game, it's probably a must-win game in terms of keeping our heads held high. I think the season, well, the league has gone, in my opinion, and a lot of City fans' opinion now. It's so far away, but it's just about trying to salvage as much as we can from the season, enjoy it game by game, try and pick up our form as we reach Christmas, and hopefully just enjoy the rest of the season rather than it just being a bit of a grueling slog, which has been over the last couple of months, where we've just not been playing great. I just want to see us back playing good football, really, and if the results follow, and if the gap closes, then great. But as far as I'm concerned, a lot of City fans are concerned, the title's gone, so it's just about football now, about each game in isolation.
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Adam. That was Adam Waring from City Extra. But he said some interesting things there that I think that is the belief from City fans, that they want Phil Foden to get his opportunity. But I think you can kind of hear it in Adam's voice there that there's an unlikely aspect to that. I think they hope that it will happen, but I don't think it. I don't think it will, and I don't think they think it will, because City, I don't think it would be a risk to give Phil Foden the opportunity to fill that void, but I don't think City would be willing to take what they perceive that as a risk. So I think they'd invest a lot of money, £50 million on another midfielder. It seems unlikely City will make any signings. Nathan Ake was the man linked, but I can't imagine they're going to sign a player that's now out for the next 6 weeks with a hamstring injury, considering Merritt Laporte's already out with a long-term injury. And Pep Guardiola, could he leave at the end of the season? His contract runs until 2021, but according to reports today, has that break clause in his contract at the end of the season. Ultimately, and I read it in a few papers today, it comes down to Guardiola. If he wants to go, he will go. If he wants to stay, he will very much stay. Interestingly, two names that have been linked with the City job, if he were to leave, Mauricio Pochettino and Brendan Rodgers, if Guardiola does leave at the end of the season. City are away at Arsenal on Sunday, as I said. goals, I think, are the order of the day in that one. I don't think we're going to be seeing either side keep a clean sheet. According to Adam, the title is gone. City are out of the title race. If you want to get in touch with us this afternoon, call us on 0208 7020 558 or WhatsApp us on that very same number. We'll be back after this.
This is Love Sport.
Welcome back to the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. We've been talking a bit about Manchester City and Pep Guardiola, whether he'll leave Manchester City at the end of the season. Also talking a bit about Liverpool after Jurgen Klopp signed a contract extension until 2024. I'm sure we'll be talking a little bit of Liverpool and a bit of Manchester City with our next guest in terms of the links between the Bundesliga and the Premier League to talk all things German football. I'm delighted to say we're joined by Ronan Murphy, German football expert for Goal. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Ronan. I mentioned links between Bundesliga and the Premier League, but the Austrian Bundesliga to the Premier League. It emerged yesterday that Liverpool are closing in on the signing of Takumi Minamino from Salzburg for £7.25 million. Impressed against Liverpool in both group stage games in this season's Champions League. It seems that it's an absolute bargain that Liverpool are getting for Minamino.
Yeah, it does, and not just impressive in the Champions League, it's also been impressive in the Austrian Bundesliga this season. He's contributed to 20 goals in 22 games for Salzburg in all competitions this season. And that kind of attacking record is something that Liverpool will be looking for in a wing sort of player. And he's someone who will track back, he'll fight hard for the team, and he seems like the perfect fit for Liverpool and Jurgen Klopp.
It seems, Ronan, like that just the release clause is one reason why Liverpool would have brought their interest forward to January, as well as the fact that he played obviously very well against Liverpool in this season's Champions League group stages, but also the fact that there were plenty of other clubs interested in the Premier League. Manchester United were interested, supposedly didn't know of this release clause in his contract. Other clubs around Europe, Borussia Mönchengladbach in Germany, were interested in signing him. I suppose one of the key things as well with this is how the relationship that Michael Edwards, the Liverpool sporting director, has built up with Salzburg in order to secure this deal.
Yeah, and I think the fact that Ralf Rangnick at Red Bull, their head of sport, he's involved with Leipzig and Salzburg, I think the relationship they have with him is definitely helpful, because they've brought in a few players already from the kind of Red Bull umbrella, Sadio Mane, Naby Keita. These guys have come through the ranks at Red Bull and have gone on to Liverpool. And I think any young player coming through the ranks there, it's a conveyor belt of talent, is always going to be someone that's on Liverpool's radar. And this relationship and the fact that Liverpool were alerted to this release clause, whereas other clubs, like you mentioned, weren't, is hugely beneficial, maybe even for both clubs.
Let's talk about a few other transfer stories then, Ronan. Obviously, this time in December, we love a bit of transfer gossip ahead of the January transfer window opening. One of the biggest storylines, whether it be this window or in the summer, will be that of Jadon Sancho, obviously the Dortmund and England winger, being linked with a move back to the Premier League. Where realistically, Ronan, do you think his future will lie? And do you think it's something that will be sorted in January, in the summer? Or, as some have suggested, maybe a Pulisic-esque deal, where a deal is agreed in January, loaned back to Dortmund, and then joins up next summer?
Yeah, I think if he does move, it won't be in January. And there might be, obviously, a move done or a deal done in January, but I can't see him leaving Dortmund in the winter. And Dortmund have kind of repeatedly insisted that he's not for sale in January. But at the same time, they seem to be resigned to the fact that he will leave next summer and he is on the way out. And there's kind of bigger teams looking for him. Liverpool have been linked, but I'm not sure that they're willing to pay the kind of fee. 100, 120, 140 million euro has been touted as a possible price tag for him. And I think that's way too much for Liverpool to spend on a player. But Manchester United and Chelsea then seem to be kind of the key figures in the battle for him. And I suppose a lot depends on maybe if either of them can get into the Champions League. And that could play a huge role in deciding whether he signs for either of those clubs.
Let's move on to Erling Braut Haaland. Obviously, is a very well talked about player. Obviously, still very, very young. He looks like an absolute tank up front for Salzburg, which, although it was interesting to hear when he was younger, he was very, very small. It's hard to think of that now. He's been linked to pretty much everyone, Ronan, across Europe. It's come out that on Wednesday, he potentially visited with both Borussia Dortmund and RB Leipzig, maybe no surprise there. Where do you think he's going to end up, and is it likely to happen in the window coming up?
Yeah, I think he will be on the move in January. He's one of the top goal scorers in the Champions League, and with Salzburg getting knocked out of the Champions League and down into the Europa League, it's a chance for him to continue in the Champions League to sign for either Dortmund or Leipzig. Dortmund, I think, maybe are winning the race for him at the moment. Leipzig did confirm that meeting this morning. Their head coach, Julian Nagelsmann, said that he had spoken to Haaland. He kind of discussed the football philosophy they had, but at the same time, he admitted that they're not currently in the market for a striker, and I suppose until maybe Timo Werner moves on, or if they could agree a deal to sell him, he might be the long-term replacement there. But in the short term, it seems Borussia Dortmund are more in need of a striker, because Paco Alcácer, their kind of main man, he's subject to injuries throughout his career, and it's still happening at Dortmund, and there's no guarantee he's fit to start every game or play 90 minutes. And a young striker like Haaland would be someone that would perfectly fit into their team for the second half of the season and maybe help them push on and challenge for the Bundesliga title.
You mentioned Timo Werner's name there, Ronan. He's been linked with probably the two big names that he's been linked with, or two most interested parties, are Liverpool and Bayern Munich. Do you think that there's a chance if Erling Haaland were to move to Leipzig, that Werner could move? Would it be more likely that he would move to the Premier League, or would he move, which a lot of German players do make the move if they're going up in the world in the Bundesliga, up to Bayern Munich?
I think Bayern Munich had been hoping to get him this summer, this coming summer, for free from Leipzig. But unfortunately for them, he signed a new contract at the start of the season, so that kind of took that off the cards. There's talk that there is a low release clause, maybe 20 or 30 million in it, that maybe he could move to Bayern Munich for those kind of figures when he's probably worth twice that much in the summer. So I think Bayern are probably still leading the race for him, even though they kind of dilly-dallied a bit on whether they would sign him or not. But with Lewandowski now in his 30s, they need someone to replace him in the long term. So Bayern Munich probably are leading the race for him, and he might be a better fit there than he is at Liverpool, because a lot of people say that he's a kind of a system player, and maybe he mightn't be the kind of striker that Liverpool need. And I'm not sure he's a proper replacement for Firmino up front, because few players are really.
We were talking about Pep Guardiola just before you came on, Ronan, and talking about this suggestion, although, as I said it in his press conference in the last few minutes, Guardiola has denied any suggestion that there's a break clause in his contract. Now, there have been some murmurings that he may go back to Germany to manage Bayern Munich. Do you think that that's something that's likely to happen, or the fact that he didn't win the Champions League then means that it's extremely unlikely he'd make the return to Germany?
I think maybe it's something that Bayern Munich would love, and I think Bayern Munich fans and the board and everyone involved would really like Guardiola to come back, but I think he's kind of achieved maybe all he can do there, and I'm not sure he sees it as a mission to go back and win the Champions League with them, because it's very difficult to win the Champions League with Bayern Munich, especially this current Bayern Munich side. They're not as good, maybe, as the one that he had when he left. So I think if he was to return to a former club, it would probably be Barcelona in his native Spain. I really can't see him return to Bayern Munich. And maybe Bayern could be the next team for Klopp when his contract now expires in 2024.
Talking of Bayern Munich, they've been linked for 12, 18 months with a move for Leroy Sané, who's obviously been out with quite a long-term injury. Obviously, his contract is slowly running down further and further. Do you think, obviously, we've heard suggestions that he's fallen out with people on Germany duty, he's fallen out maybe at times with Pep Guardiola. Do you think that's something that in January Manchester City will be seriously considering, thinking he's running down his contracts, that they want to try and maximise whatever value they can? And do you think finally that move for Leroy Sané to Bayern Munich, which is kind of the dream move for most German players, do you think that's likely to happen in January?
I think it is. I think Bayern, especially the fact that Kingsley Coman, he got another injury during the week, and he seems to be kind of so brittle that he gets injured every few months, and there's no guarantee he's going to be a week in, week out player for them. I think they're going to have to make a move for Sané, and the sooner they do it, the better. They missed out. Obviously, they were set to sign him at the start of the season, but that injury to him happened in the Community Shield, and that was just before the transfer deadline. And I think they won't let this happen again. So I think they're going to really go all out for him in January, and the money is there. So Man City will probably be willing to shake their hand on a deal, especially as he shows no interest in signing a new contract.
And just finally, Ronan, Kai Havertz, obviously one of, we've seen he's spent years and years talking about the next kind of the next real big prospect in German football, and Kai Havertz seems to be one of those at Bayer Leverkusen at the moment. He's been touted around all sorts of European sides around the sort of £100 million mark. He's been linked to moves to the Premier League. He's obviously the usual link is to Bayern Munich, as we've been talking about. Where do you think his future lies beyond this season?
Yeah, he's kind of indicated himself that he might be a future Bayern Munich player. He's kind of said it in the past that all German players would like to go, same thing as Timo Werner earlier. But I think he might surprise many, and he could be the kind of player that moves to La Liga and goes to the likes of Barcelona or Real Madrid, because they are willing to spend the kind of figures necessary to buy the likes of a Kai Havertz. Whereas I think if Bayern Munich are spending money, they're going to spend it on Leroy Sané, and then after that they have to weigh up whether they want to spend £100 million on Coutinho, who's having a bit of a mixed season at the moment, and if he can kind of kick on in the second half of the season, they might decide to spend the money on him rather than buying Havertz.
Thank you very much for joining me this afternoon, Ronan. That was Ronan Murphy, German football expert for Goal. It's really good to get people like Ronan on. Obviously, everyone loves a transfer rumour, don't they, and a bit of gossip, but really good to get Ronan's insight there on. There's always links, aren't there, between the Premier League and the Bundesliga, and you look through that list there, Jadon Sancho being linked with a move back to the Premier League. Leroy Sané, could he make the move over to Bayern Munich? Where does Kai Havertz, where does his future lie? So really good to get Ronan on there to talk a bit about, obviously, the Bundesliga and the links between that and the Premier League. Remember, if you want to get in touch with us this afternoon, call us on 0208 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We're also on WhatsApp. And as you may have heard over the last few days, we have some very exciting news here at Love Sport that we are going national from Monday. So you'll be able to get Love Sport across the UK on national digital radio from the beginning of next week. So when you follow your team up and down the country, you'll be able to listen to Love Sport the whole journey. Make sure you spread the word. Plus, there'll be lots more new fan shows coming soon to Love Sport, live across the UK on digital radio from Monday. Obviously, lots of Premier League action to come this weekend. We're going to look ahead to all of those, and we're also going to talk a little bit of West Ham.
Love Sport.
Welcome back to the Premier League fan show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. Just a rundown of all the Europa League results from last night. All five British clubs threw into the Europa League last 32. Wolves won 4-0 at home against Beşiktaş in Group K. Diogo Jota's 11-minute hat-trick proving the difference there. Manchester United scored 4 in 11 minutes as they beat AZ Alkmaar 4-0 in Group 11. Mason Greenwood scoring twice. In Group E, Celtic lost 2-0 away at Cluj, but they were already through as group winners. Standard Liège 2, Arsenal 2 in Group F. Arsenal had to come from 2-0 down with two late goals to draw that game, and they did finish top. Rangers 1, Young Boys 1 in Group G, which sends Rangers through as well. As I said, all nine British clubs are through to either the last 32 of the Europa League or the last 16 of the Champions League as well. In the Premier League, we're going to talk about West Ham with producer Tom just in a moment. Just to run out of all the Premier League fixtures we've had so much to talk about, we haven't even mentioned the Premier League fixtures. Liverpool play Watford, Burnley against Newcastle, Chelsea Bournemouth, Leicester against Norwich, Sheffield United play Aston Villa, Southampton play West Ham, as we'll talk about in just a moment, Manchester United take on Everton, Wolves play Tottenham, Arsenal play Manchester City, and Crystal Palace take on Brighton. As I said, producer Tom is in the studio to talk all things West Ham. It's pretty, well, not great, I suppose, to be a West Ham fan show. Obviously, Tom is on the West Ham fan show with We Are West Ham every Tuesday night. What's the feeling going into this weekend? You're away at Southampton, who are in and around West Ham near the bottom. Can Manuel Pellegrini save his job, or is his fate already decided?
It's a bit of a weird one this weekend, because there's a lot of people who already think that Pellegrini's time's up and that he can't change what's seems to be a sinking ship at the minute. And if we were even to win on the weekend, with the break we have, with the Liverpool obviously playing in the Club World Cup, it means we've got a break until Boxing Day. And in a Premier League season, you don't tend to get 2 weeks where you can employ a manager and they can have 2 weeks to work with the squad, particularly in a period like this. So it's a weird one. If he was to win, I think you have to give the guy more time, and you have to say, all right, it's a big result and an important game for us against another relegation-threatened team. And it'd be a big result. And to sack him off the back of that would be harsh. But I do personally believe, I can't see a result coming, and I do personally think his time will be up come Saturday evening, Sunday morning.
You say there, Tom, about if West Ham were to win tomorrow evening, then he'd have to be given another game. But what I always find strange in football is if you're already considering doing it, then surely it's worth just doing it. That Arsenal dilly-dallied with Unai Emery for a few weeks and you sort of thought, well, why didn't you make that decision 2 weeks before in the international break? Are West Ham just putting off the inevitable? And the longer they do that, do they find themselves at more risk of getting relegated?
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, spot on. I believe that we've already held off too long. It should have been the minute Arsenal and the capitulation we had, it was clear as day that it wasn't that what's going on right now isn't working. That's when we should have strike while the iron is hot, they say. We should have got rid of him then or even before. You look at the teams around us and how quickly they acted and got rid of their managers, and they made big, bold, brash decisions early on, and it's just in West Ham's fabric that we're not going to be the club who are going to make the first move and be a bit bolder in these things, and we'd rather hang on to a sinking ship and hope. Like the result against Chelsea, it was a flash in the pan. West Ham always turn up in games like that. And I think for every West Ham fan watching, it was pretty inevitable that we hadn't improved, we hadn't got better. It was just merely a lightning bolt was struck and we got lucky that day. We've not got lucky, we deserved the win, but is one of those where it was such an anomaly of a result and the inevitable was going to keep having and we're going to keep getting turned over and look like a poor side, which we still do. So I think we should have done it earlier. But then I always feel I want West Ham to be represented in the best possible light. And for me, if you're going to sack a manager after a win in a big game, I don't think that sends the right message to potential candidates coming in that we're already thinking ahead of Manuel Pellegrini whilst he's already got a job. I think a guy in the job shouldn't already be ousted before the game on Saturday's happened.
Obviously, it's probably the most difficult question to answer. Where does the blame lie in all this? Because Manuel Pellegrini, you can have your views on him. I think at times maybe he's not been quite shown the respect that he deserved or maybe not had the full backing of all the West Ham fans at times. But even if you believe that he's not the right man and that a new manager is going to come in, there's no guarantee that the next guy come in because there are quite clearly bigger problems, as there are at clubs like this, that you look at Arsenal, for example, that there are bigger, deeper problems. Is it the players? Is it the board? Is it the manager? Obviously, it's going to be a mixture of all of those because you don't get to a situation like this if it's not the case. Where, though, who needs to take the most responsibility for this?
I think, for me, the club has been, since the move to Olympic Stadium, the club has been shrouded in negativity. And I think I only, personally, when I look at it, I only look right at the top. And I think this comes from the three owners that we have. And sorry, the two owners, the two Davies and Karen Brain, I think that the way they conduct themselves in this move and the little amount of money they spent on turning the stadium into an actual home for West Ham and a place where people enjoy coming and make it a football experience, not merely you're coming just for the 90 minutes of football. Football is a lot more than that to a lot more people. And Upton Park was a cultural thing. It was a historic thing where families and generations of people have gone and they loved going there. It meant something and it represented what they believe West Ham is, and the football club West Ham means a lot more than just the 90 minutes on the pitch. And I think they haven't accepted that, and I don't think they've ever made themselves accountable for how poor the move has actually gone and how poor the team's performed since we moved there. So I think for me the negativity starts right at the top with them, but there is also no denying that the players are a good squad and they're underperforming, and also Pellegrini's not doing what he should do. He's not getting the best out of what we thought at the start of the season was a really, really talented squad.
So if, as we would probably assume, he's not going to last much longer at West Ham, even if Saturday does go all right, attention obviously turns to who might be the man to replace him. Obviously, you might have a name in mind, but in terms of what type of a manager West Ham need, is it a case of, because of the situation they find themselves in, for the next 6 months, it has to be a case of whatever the situation, they have to just make sure they avoid relegation, and even if it is a short-term fix, going for that? Or are you thinking more long-term and thinking, yeah, there may be a manager that might be a bit of a risk or might not necessarily save us, but are you thinking long-term or are you thinking short-term?
I think we absolutely have to start thinking long-term right now because the state of the fans, the disconnect between the fans and the club right now is at a my all-time high probably in the 20-odd years I've been a West Ham fan. And I think that needs to be addressed because it's getting scarily close to where that stadium will... There will be plenty and plenty of empty seats in the upcoming weeks or whatever, and talks about protests coming. And we've got to think about repairing this relationship between the fans and the board, getting a team that the club's actually proud of on the pitch, making structural changes from the top through to the playing staff. And I think that we need to be thinking in the long term. And I mean, Manuel Pellegrini seemed like a great appointment at the time, and he's a very, very good manager. I don't think what he's done here changes that. I think we were definitely improved last year, but this year's just we've tailed off. And I actually respect the guy, and I just don't think he suits us, and it's a shame. But I think we, and you could have looked at that appointment, and actually when you look back in hindsight, it might well have been a short-termism appointment, because he's in his mid-70s, he's just been in China, he clearly wasn't going to be a man in the job for 5-7 years anyway. So I think we now need to start looking at someone who's a young, energetic manager, appreciates whether he played for West Ham or just has been in and around the Premier League for a long time and understands what Upton Park and what West Ham, the actual real West Ham was, and respects that and starts implementing that. It's not going to be a short-term fix, that. So it's not about getting another David Moyes in for me. It's about getting a guy in who's wants to be there at West Ham for the foreseeable future and turn it into his club and his team.
And so just finally looking ahead to this weekend's game, it's a pretty big one away at Southampton, both sides just outside the relegation zone at the moment. Do you think actually in some ways, though, even though you would usually associate playing at home as an advantage, that West Ham being away this weekend might actually be better for them?
100%. 100%. You could tell the nerves against Arsenal from both sides. Neither team wanted to lose it, and particularly us being at home. It was so cagey, so scared, and we were playing football not to lose and not to win the game. And that's ultimately, you can't do that away from home. Also suits our players a bit more. We're now with a fit Antonio. We don't have to. We won't. Southampton like having the ball. Hasenhüttl, they'll press high. If we can get in behind them, turn them, be a bit more direct, I think it definitely does suit us than having to play against a team who's going to drop a bit deep. Southampton, if they came to our place, they'd inevitably drop deeper and we'd have to try and unlock them. And that's what we struggled to do all season, is create chances against teams who defend deep. And now, playing away from home, there's more likely to be more space for us on the counter-attack and also less pressure, less negativity from the fans. The guys are there on Saturday will most likely be well behind the team, and I would much prefer going there. But either way, I think how poor we've been the last month or two, I'm not particularly confident of getting a result.
Thank you very much for joining me, producer Tom. Obviously, Tom appears on the West Ham Fan Show with We Are West Ham every Tuesday evening between 7 and 8 o'clock. And I suppose whatever happens, there'll be a story to tell on Tuesday night on the West Ham Fan Show. West Ham make the trip to Southampton. That's the Saturday night football this weekend. Looking at the other fixtures, Liverpool play Watford at lunchtime tomorrow. Burnley play Newcastle, Chelsea, Bournemouth, Leicester v Norwich and Sheffield United, Aston Villa, the 3 o'clock kickoffs. Then we have three games on Sunday, Manchester United versus Everton, Wolves v Tottenham and Arsenal v Manchester City. Three intriguing games there on Super Sunday. And then the one Monday night football, Crystal Palace against Brighton. Just a reminder of some of the big breaking news. Obviously, we're getting plenty of it today. It's been a very, very busy news day. Jurgen Klopp has signed a new contract at Liverpool, a two-year contract extension until 2024. Pep Guardiola, there were rumours surfacing today about him having a break clause in his contract, that he has a contract until 2021, but at the end of this season could potentially leave if he wanted to. Now, he's had his press conference. He's denied that. Read into that what you will, believe what you will, but he has completely denied that and also said that Manchester City will make no signings in January. But again, we'll just have to wait and see on that one. But plenty of Premier League football to look forward to over the weekend.
This is Love Sport.